Thank you so much for watching. This is Corey from CoreyBakerFilmmaker.com, and I just saw The Lovebirds, written by Aaron Abrams, Brendan Gall, and Martin Garrow, and directed by Michael Showalter. So this movie had a really interesting path in getting to Netflix here, because it was originally supposed to debut at South by Southwest and then have a little festival run before going into theaters on April 3rd, I believe, was originally the plan. And obviously, COVID-19 had impacts on that as well. So Paramount made a deal to put it onto Netflix, and now we have it and it's available for you to watch on Netflix right this very moment. I tell you though, in regards to it showing up on Netflix instead of having sort of a theatrical run, I think that it actually kind of works out better for the film, because this movie is really good as far as a type of flick that you would watch at home with a bunch of friends. I mean, like, I'm certainly not putting out the movie-going experience of it all, because you know that I'm all about going to the movie theaters, but this felt right. I mean, the people in my house, we were all looking for something to watch, and Lovebirds came up, and it's just like, oh yes, let's all watch that. And it was a consensus agreement, and after it was all done, we all really loved it. I mean, like, we all had a really good time. We all laughed. I wouldn't say that it was, like, the best movie. It wasn't, like, you know, something of sort of, like, higher art. I wouldn't recommend, or I wouldn't say this is getting nominated for anything. But it's good fun. You need this every once in a while. Just put a smile on your face. I tell you, I really enjoyed the ability of Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae to be able to perfectly set the other person up and sort of spike the ball at the same time. When putting my thoughts together as to how I was going to talk about this movie, one of the things I kept thinking about was volleyball players. Like, how, you know, there might be two volleyball players and one sets it up and the other one spikes, and then on the next play, the person who was spiking before might be the setter this time. Both Issa and Kumail have a wonderful ability to be able to set up the other perfect person very nicely and be able to handle their own punchline. And there was just a great chemistry between the two of them, comedy-wise, that allowed them to sort of nail every single punchline, because there was somebody just as capable sort of setting up the jokes. And they both had plenty of opportunities to be the punchline deliverer and the setter-upper. It was all very even, and I thought that they did a great job between the two of them. I think if there's anything, it's just that, to me, it felt like they weren't quite as close as you usually see people playing couples being in movies. Now, this is a little bit, like, it's not a perfect thing. I mean, there have been movie couples who are real-life couples that don't look like real-life couples in the movie. It's really hard to find that balance. It's 95% of the way there, but I would say that that little 5% was somewhat noticeable. More than the character development, though, just the plot in general. So I'll get into that here a little bit. Basically, Issa plays Leilani and Kumail plays Gibran, and they've been dating for a couple years now. They live together. They're getting in these little arguments that couples get into. Not like superheated things like they're of high importance, but like superheated things like when you're in a relationship with someone for a long time and you can get an argument about toast and it feels like it's the end of the world. Basically, Gibran and Leilani are at that part of their relationship. And they're driving and they decide that this is it. This is the end of the relationship. And then, bam, right there at that moment, they hit a bicyclist. And they're worried that they might have killed him, that they might have hurt him, but he immediately gets up, even though he's all bloody and bruised, and he's like, I have to keep going, don't worry about it, it's fine. Immediately, a cop, someone who identifies himself as a cop, comes up to the car, says, I need to come to your vehicle. The cop gets in, driving the car, chases down Bicycle, this guy we know as Mustache, chases down Bicycle, and runs him over, and then does the thing of going back and forth over the car several times, or over the body several times to make sure the job was done. He dips, and now all of a sudden, Gibran and Leilani are caught up by two hipsters who have noticed the scene of the crime and are going to call the cops. And now Gibran and Leilani need to escape because they're worried that the cops are going to think that they are the ones responsible. And because of that, they need to sort of solve the crime before the police start asking too many questions, because there's nothing they can really say to explain the whole situation other than the truth, and they think that the truth is going to be completely unbelieved in this situation. That being said, as the story goes along, it just sort of gets lost in these deeper situations. It almost feels like there was a really interesting political script that one of the writers was working on, and they decided to just sort of like steal moments from one to put into the other. Because, you know, there's this moment where it's shown in the trailer, they're tied up to chairs in like this barn, and there's a senator that's involved in this whole little thing. Like, what kind of dirt do you have on the senator? It sort of feels out of place with the movie that started. And then as soon as we get to sort of like the Eyes Wide Shut sex party thing, it's sort of further off the rails. Now, don't get me wrong, everyone's doing a wonderful job in performing these scenes, and they're fun and they're funny, but it just didn't seem like the best possible version of the way that the story could go. That being said, we over the time sort of realize why they're so good together, and they sort of fall back in love and yada yada. Everything could be expected, probably not in the exact order that they happened, but or like the situations of it, because I wouldn't have imagined walking into this movie that there was going to be an Eyes Wide Shut type scene in it. But I think overall it's just that like they sort of turned up the ridiculousness of it. Like they kept trying to reach a more ridiculous moment, and in doing so they sort of lost the heart of where this story could have laid. I feel like a lot of this could have sort of been rethought and streamlined and made a little bit tighter, and probably would have been more enjoyable as a story, as a movie, than it currently is. But I think that nobody's really thinking about that, because it's an excuse to have Issa and Camille in our living rooms in this situation to watch them in this movie. They literally have been doing anything. We love these people, so we were probably going to love this movie regardless of what was going on. I know it sounds like I'm being harsh, and I don't mean to. I'm really honestly a humongous fan of Michael Showalter, the director. I've been a fan of his since his acting days with The State and Stella. I was just watching Stella the other day, sort of getting ready for this. So I really appreciate him. And his first movie, The Baxter, which is another one that kind of like, it's just great performances and great people all throughout it, so it sort of carries a less than optimal plot, but the sort of kitsch of that one where we follow the guy who's left behind. So like there's the grand romantic gesture in the movies where a guy swoops in and steals the girl away on her wedding day. Who's the guy who's left on the altar with his fiance taken away from him? And we sort of follow that guy who is the Baxter. I really loved that movie when I saw it. I thought it was really cool and neat and different. And Showalter's got such a great eye for being able to just make these things work. Like, it sounds like it's not as much of a skill as it is until you realize how difficult it is to make movies like this. But something that Spielberg was always well known for is being able to sort of create the sense of space within the scene, within the movie that he's making. So if you watch the Spielberg flick, you'll see that you have a pretty good idea of where everybody is in the room, how big the room is. When camera angles change, you're never thrown off. There's never a sense of where am I or any kind of disorientation. Showalter's really good at this too. And Showalter, I feel like, makes movies that under other directors wouldn't be worth it at all, and he makes them good. He raises the level, but I worry that he hasn't really gotten the opportunity to do the thing that will really transcend yet. I Really loved The Big Sick. I thought The Big Sick was good, and I thought he was good as a director in it. But I feel like somewhere in the next couple years of Showalter, we'll have the Adam McKay, the Todd Phillips moment where somebody will be like, oh, this guy, this goofy guy from Stella is now making, you know, the new Joker. I fully anticipate something like this is going to happen. He's too smart and too funny and too interesting to not have some sort of really cool project somewhere down the pipeline that'll completely change the conversation about him. But until then, we wait. I think it would be best if maybe we broke up. I'm sorry, I can't be mad at you. Come on in here, leaderboard. It's leaderboard time. I'll tell you right up front, this is going to be Fast and the Furious leaderboard. This first part is almost irrelevant to the whole thing. It's a fun movie. It's enjoyable. I don't really understand how the script sort of lived the way it did for so long, but again, enjoyment. It's a comedy movie. Don't overthink it. As far as how does this compare to 1917? If I have to give it a rating, I would give The Lovebirds a 7-1. But that's not why you're here. You're here for the Fast and the Furious leaderboard. Fast and the Furious leaderboard time. This movie was, I don't want to make it sell like it's huge, but it considerably moves up in ratings when I'm putting it mostly to the ideal of, did you have a good time? Did you enjoy it? How much of a good time did you have? I would give this movie 8-1. It's a full point jump on the Fast and the Furious leaderboard, and that's because this movie is just a lot of fun. Don't think too hard. Don't try and make more of it than it has to be. When you have really good people, really good actors, really good directors, really good crew, all that sort of stuff, you want the best from them. It's not always going to happen. Sometimes you have to have reasons to remember why you love these people so much, and this movie is one of those reasons. If you really like Issa Rae, you really like Kumail Nanjiani, or if you're a big Michael Showalter directing stan like me, then you will enjoy this movie, and I implore you to go see it. It's out on Netflix right now, so there's no reason for you not to enjoy it. That is it from me. If you would please check me out on all social media that you feel comfortable following me on, facebook.com/CoreyBakerFilm, at LegendsBV5 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Trying to pump out more reviews, so please let me know if you see anything worth seeing, and I will tell everyone all about it here on this channel. I thank you so much for watching, and please have yourself a very safe and nice day.